Hello, and welcome to Columboys, a podcast all about the nicotine-stained, wood-paneled, sepia-toned world of Lieutenant Columbo. I'm Mac, and with me, as always, is my partner in crime, Ben. Now, I know we said we wouldn't talk about the crimes, but I'm using it as an expression and not in reference to the many serious crimes that we actually do commit. So,
that's...
Welcome, Ben.
Hi, Mac. I thought we agreed to not talk about our crimes.
This time we're taking a look at episode... I came in way too hot on that. All right. This time we're talking about episode 102, Death Lends a Hand. This episode marks the return of Levison and Link, the writing partners who created Columbo, as well as being the first episode to feature Robert Culp, who would go on to make another three appearances in episodes spanning from this one in 1971 to Columbo Goes to College in 1990. And I swear that is the real title, and I did not make it up. Columbo Goes to College is also the only episode in which he appears but does not play the culprit, making him a three-timer in the villain spot.
Wow.
He is only exceeded by Patrick McGoohan, who appeared as the killer in four separate episodes.
Oh my God. You never told... Oh,
you may know him from his role as Six from Blossom. Nope, hold on. I'm sorry. He was number six on The Prisoner.
Yeah, McGoohan.
I'm looking at the wrong thing here. I know this is a little off topic, but...
I just got really excited.
I need to read you something that I found on the Blossom IMDb page while I was writing this intro. Blossom creator Don Rio was inspired by J.D. Salinger's classic novel, The Catcher in the Rye, and wanted to make a version of that for girls. So think of Blossom as like Catcher in the Rye, but for girls.
Absolutely
anyway,
not.
Anyway, back to this episode.
No, hold on. I'm sorry.
We're still in the intro.
Everybody.
We're still in the intro, Ben.
No, but
back
Mac,
to this episode, Robert
Mac,
Culp,
what did you just do to my brain?
Robert Culp has had a long career playing dashing leading men, first coming to renown in I Spy as a spy whose partner is a sentient pile of medical waste. He later played an FBI agent working with the titular Greatest American Hero on The Greatest American Hero, a show that is most notable for its fantastic theme song than anything else about it. Oh. He died in 2010, but he left behind a legacy of square-jawed leading men that will endure for years to come. And that includes the written portion.
So that's where I know him from.
Yeah, Greatest American Hero.
Yeah. Man, mm-hmm. I used to watch that show all the time as a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't very good.
It's not a great show, but I really liked it because I'm sure I was a child and did not know how bad it was.
Like Perfect Strangers, the theme song is literally the best.
Is the best thing. Yes, absolutely.
I think it's the only television theme song to ever be number one on the Billboard charts.
That's, wow. What a weird thing.
But that has absolutely nothing to do with this episode.
No, it doesn't, but it just... Yeah, you caught me off guard there.
a couple times.
Wow.
I'm coming at you.
Death Lends a Hand.
Death Lends a Hand.
I got to say, I loved this episode.
It's a really good episode.
Really, really fantastic, fun to watch.
It's strong. It's all the things that you like about Columbo and all done in a very good, strong way.
Yeah. I will get to the very brief plot rundown, but I just want to stop and say there is a thing in the sort of initial framing, I done murdered somebody, mm-hmm. where they push in on his face and then freeze,
yeah,
and then they use the frames in his glasses,
yeah,
to show him cleaning up after the murder,
yeah,
and it's like two separate.
It's a little,
things going on at the same time.
It's a little hokey, but
it
manages to work.
But honestly,
pretty well. Yeah.
It really worked for me. Like it's such it caught me off guard, and then it kept going, and I was like, all right, I actually prefer this to just sticking us with a single scene and drawing it out further.
It's something that could have been done like with a split screen,
right?
Because it's really just serving as a time compression thing.
Yeah.
You can look on the left and see, oh well, now he's. You know, cleaning up the
right.
drinks
the
or whatever.
The viscera and the... No.
No, there is no blood.
There's no viscera.
There's
it's Columbo.
No blood. It's
There's
Columbo.
No blood. No, but I admire them for trying the weird little thing.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm just saying it worked for me.
Absolutely.
Speaking of things that worked for me, oh my God, his outfit through the entire opening bit is amazing.
Yeah, Robert Culp is exceptionally well dressed and also just a really good figure.
Oh yeah,
for the 1970s suits.
No, absolutely.
Like he had that. He had that very. He was very tall mm-hmm. and very thin.
Yep, and that's perfect because it's they're much more sculpted, and yep. then they have the and his didn't have a ton of the like flaring and things that you'd see kind of towards the late 70s.
It's all
or
pretty
anything.
Well fitted,
but it's really really nice. And I just want to talk about that suit briefly because it's because sure. it's a wild one. One, it's a 3-piece suit.
Yeah,
it's double breasted. It's a 4x2,
yes.
and it's high. It's weirdly high. So it's four buttons, and then two of them button on the one side. But they were like high enough where it almost is like they were from a 6 like button thing, but just missing the bottom two. But also, it was a much longer jacket, and looks really good on him because he was a tall guy, especially with kind of the narrower trousers and just the whole framing of his body looked very good. And then there was the weirdo vest.
It's cut in sort of it's a cut that I would say would be more similar to what would be on a Western show.
Yeah, it's like, a more vintage style of coat in that like it has that longer where it's not quite a frock coat, but it's almost there.
Yeah, and it does have those everything had that pillow stitching.
Oh yeah, edges. Yeah, the like swelled seam stitching. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the fabric covered buttons on it. It was a gray nail head. It took me a little bit to actually catch that because initially it's shot on film in the 70s and it's not, we're not looking at the film, film reels.
No.
We
should, clarify that we are watching the DVD.
Right, we are. We're watching the DVDs. So
I mean, it's as good a quality as was broadcast at the time.
Right.
So,
it's as good as we are probably going to get.
Yes.
Unless someone goes, here you go, have some film reels, and that's never going to happen.
There is a Japanese Blu-ray edition. It's the only Blu-ray.
I know, and you've told me about it.
That comes in this nice cigar box.
And how much is it?
It's expensive.
Yeah.
Because it's not out. It's not in print anymore.
Out of print. Yeah. And so the people who... Actually, that gives me an idea. Sure. Okay. I might have to look for that on the actual Japanese secondary market.
Okay.
An amazing suit. And then this incredible floral tie. That was like red poppies and, blue stuff on a white background. Just really, really knocking it out of the park. Gorgeous. And I just needed to get that out of my system. So thanks for putting up with me.
No problem. I zoned out a little bit.
Yeah,
there,
it's
but
all
back.
Right. I mean, I just, it's a really good suit.
It's a very good suit. Yeah. He's very well dressed and he's got these
pretty
very
consistently.
And he's got these square 70s glasses.
Yeah.
He looks very in control.
Yeah.
Which I think is, it kind of makes him a little more fearsome when he rages out.
Right. When he flips his top.
Right. So let's do the basic outline of the plot here. Yeah. It sounds a little convoluted, but it's actually not as complicated.
It's more straightforward than it sounds when we explain it, for sure.
So the villain this time, the culprit, is Robert Culp, who's Inspector Brimmer, who runs a detective agency.
Right.
Brimmer
and Associates, something like that.
He is investigating the wife of a paper magnate,
yes,
who
owns three newspapers
and believes that his wife is cheating on him. He tells the newspaper guy that his wife has a clean bill of health, and then then there's a reveal that his wife was in the next room listening, and he says, I've done this thing for you. You know, the way that you can help me out is, I guess I didn't say, but the reveal is that she was cheating, but it ended. And he says, well, out of the kindness of my heart, I've decided to not expose.
Because I'm a moralist and we're a rare breed these days. And then he turns around and essentially tries to blackmail her into giving him dirt.
Right,
on.
Because this guy owns three newspapers, maybe he has some information,
right.
And information is, because it's a detective agency,
right?
And detective agencies run on information, so if he hears something, he'll pass it along.
Right. And this is, let's be clear now, he's not a newspaper magnate in the 2010s. He's...
No, he, I mean...
Right. He's in the 70s. Like, yeah, they're actually...
They're, he's quite rich.
Yeah.
But
oh my God, his backyard.
He does have a very nice backyard.
It's so swank.
So anyway. So the woman says that she'll think about it, but she comes to his place at, late at night and says, I'm not going to do it, and in fact I'm going to expose you and your whole operation to my husband, and he's gonna, you know, make a big scene in the newspapers,
and he's gonna bury you, and also I'm gonna tell him that I had an affair so that you don't have any leverage over me.
Right.
And he
murders her.
Right. He
flips out
rather poorly to that.
He does it in the heat of the moment. It's not like he meant to kill her.
It's not premeditated.
He just like slaps her and she hits her head on the table as she goes down.
He like rears back, breaks the glass on the frame on the wall, and then backhands her and she falls. And it's like this
slow
motion sequence. Yeah, she hits her head and that kills her.
Yes.
And then and so then we get the push in on his face, right, and then the scenes of him.
So then Columbo comes in to investigate, and in the course of the investigation, the husband, who thinks that it's not going fast enough, hires the detective agency to work the case for him. That's the basic premise.
Yeah, and so basically the idea is that he brings this guy in because he's somebody that, you know, the newspaper magnate trusts to help assist this.
So Columbo has to, and so Columbo has to investigate a case with a guy who is also trying to derail the case at every opportunity.
And that's one of the things that I had that moment where I was started to wonder in this one, like, how quickly did he figure out?
The answer is immediately. The first time he meets him, he figures it out.
Yeah.
And he says as much. But I think what's interesting is that I think that he suspects. I think he suspects as early as the morgue, and the reason for that is that they do a very clever writing thing, which is the clean bill of health. That phrase travels through three characters, in an interesting way. So in the opening scene, Robert Culp tells the newspaper guy, I give your wife a clean bill of health.
Right.
And then later at the morgue, husband, the newspaper magnate, tells Columbo without mentioning the investigation. He doesn't actually even bring up the investigator.
Right. He just says she had a clean bill of health.
She had a clean bill of health. And Columbo, you can tell Columbo takes note of that.
Right. Because that's a weird thing to say to someone about your wife.
It would be a weird thing to say if...
My wife just got murdered, but she had a clean bill of health. Huh?
Well, because he's asking him, like, did she have any enemies? Did she have any affairs? And the guy says, no, she never had any affairs. She had a clean bill of health.
You're right.
And that sticks with Columbo.
You're right.
Yeah.
I think you're right, Mac. I think that's where
he goes.
So I think that's
the moment where he says, someone else was investigating this.
Yeah,
I need to figure out what that was and then get into it. And then as soon as he meets,
Because the moment they're introduced, he pulls out this whole thing about reading palms and all of this stuff, and is really convincing with his terminology and everything. And probably honestly, somebody
might know something about it.
Right?
Yeah.
It's one of those things.
He's kind of a weird jack of all trades. Sometimes.
Yeah. You kind of have to wonder, like, how much of it is? I mean, and that's Columbo, and that's why I love him. How much of it is a put on, and how much of it is actually stuff that he used to fuck around with?
Yeah. So he says, you know, I know about reading palms. I'm a superstitious guy. Can I see your palm? And he reads the palm of the newspaper magnate and says, oh, well, your lifeline stops here, but then it starts again. So you've experienced a tragedy, but your life will go on.
Right.
And then he says to the investigator guy who's been brought in, who
Grimmer,
he's just met, he says, he takes his hand and does a quick little reading. I don't even remember what he says to him.
Well, he says, I can't remember. He says something about like two of the lines intersecting.
Oh, that it's very fortuitous. I think he says it's very fortuitous. Like, this is a very fortuitous meeting or something like that. Your life is going to change.
Yes.
Something along
that
line.
And then he also mentions something about like a thumb size. Basically what he suggests is, I also see you're very ambitious.
Right.
And that seems to be like, it's a very Columbo dig.
Yeah. But the reveal, I guess, spoiler alert. I mean, if you're listening to this and you haven't watched the episode,
so what are you doing?
I don't know what you're doing.
Yeah.
But he's actually reading. He's actually just feeling the ring.
Right.
That's the entire reason he's.
Yeah. The whole setup is so that he could check out the guy's ring
because the woman has a mark on her face that Columbo suspects would have happened
when she was struck.
When she was struck, which he's correct. Because he says you wouldn't necessarily punch a woman. You might slap a woman.
Right.
And he's right, because that's exactly what happened.
That's how it went down. Yeah. In fact, when he shows up and they are checking out the body when she was first discovered, and they talk about, you know, that she has a bruise on her cheek and then, you know, she took the, you know, hit on the back of her head. He is checking it out again. Mm-hmm. And the other officer is like, oh, I knew you weren't paying attention. But he's actually, I think, at that point, noticing the mark, like the actual cut, rather than just the bruising. But yeah, so that's the general basic plot, and then he does some fun stuff to set him up, which I really love.
There's a couple great misdirects. The inspector wants to hire Columbo. This is a very, very sort of classic, sort of every classic Columbo trope comes through in this one.
Effectively trying to bribe him. In a way.
I think the only thing that doesn't really happen in this one is that at no point does the inspector go like, I'm tired of dealing with you, get out of here. That's sort of the final evolution of the form is like, you know, secretary, if you see this guy sniffing around, you know,
throw
him out.
Yeah. Yeah. It never gets to that point, but it also seems like part of that is because Columbo is sort of one step ahead, just knowing that he's dealing with someone who runs a PI agency.
Yeah.
Because there's all the stuff about him trying to catch like the crew cut guy who is like tailing
the
golf instructor she was having an affair with and like all of those sorts of things. And I had a thing written down that I just wanted to talk about, which was I think when he is dumping off the body, it's somewhere around that where the driving sequence where the music goes full on jazz.
It's all so the music is Henry Mancini, and he just decides to go super swingy for like driving the body around. It's like
it's amazing. Like it's such a weird turn, but I was absolutely into it, and I wanted to make sure I mentioned it because I just wrote in all caps jazz drive.
It's pretty great, yeah. But it is a little out of.
Oh yeah,
it's completely out of place.
Yeah, it was enough to like pull me out of it and it be like, "Well, like I'm having fun here."
It seems like it should be a little more somber for the hiding of the body.
Yes,
but it's very jazzy and fun.
Yeah,
yeah. I think this was a really great episode. I don't know. I don't know how much more I have to say about.
Yeah, no, it's fair. I mean, I really enjoy the turns. I really liked how he, I'll just real briefly talk about like, you know, the sort of final ploy and setup.
Sure.
To catch Brimmer was basically to pretend that they were going to exhume the body.
No, they did exhume
the body. Right, to look for contacts.
So the wife wore contacts.
Right.
And Columbo has the idea that if they exhume the body, they may find that she is missing a contact.
Right.
Because the medical examiner didn't look for that. They were looking for a cause of death.
Yes. And so it's a long shot. And it's also one of those things where you have to think, oh, maybe he was really lucky. And then he very clearly makes it plain that there's no luck involved. He doesn't take any chances. The whole thing is a setup. So
exactly.
Not only did he potato the guy's car.
Right. So the inspector hears from his guy he's got tailing Columbo that they're exhuming the body, and he runs down to the garage and says,
get my car ready.
Start his car, but it won't start. So they put his car into the garage. You know, it's an interesting thing because there isn't actually a mistake. They could Columbo can't really catch him because everything he has is sort of circumstantial.
Right.
Like this guy is left-handed. The murderer was probably left-handed as well. She had a
yeah,
mark, I mean, on her face, similar to the ring.
He's just kind of chasing after consciousness of guilt.
He can't really prove anything for sure. So what he needs is a piece of conclusive evidence, like a contact lens being found in the place. But the guy, his car won't start. He gets a second car. They put his car, which is the same car that he used to transport the body, into a garage. And this is where the trap is laid, because Columbo says that the medical examiner found that the body was missing a contact lens.
Right, and that could have fallen out where she was murdered.
Right.
Or, you know,
or when the body was transported. Things.
And then even makes a dig about I just wish that, you know, we could basically, you know, tell the murderer that we're, you know, looking for this so that, you know, he would be rushing to try and find it before us.
I didn't like that. I felt it was like a bridge too far. I felt like it was almost for the audience.
It's kind of it's like a mix of for the audience and kind of taunting.
Yeah, I felt it was too much of a hand tip for the murderer, and I felt it was sort of not respecting the audience a little bit.
No, that's fair. I read it more like he was kind of
just fucking with him.
It was a mixture of fucking with him, but also like fishing.
Mm.
Like kind of trying to see if he could get a rise out of him, because if he could get a rise out of him.
Yeah. Cause this guy has an extremely explosive temper. You find out he blows up at
one of his subordinates for talking to Columbo vaguely about some case that they had ages past. And, so obviously he goes home and he's digging through his lush, you know, high pile carpet trying to find it.
Oh my God, that carpet is
amazing.
It's basically like a mop.
Yeah.
Like,
it's totally.
Like now it would be like a Swiffer.
Yeah. Basically. I mean, I don't know how you actually clean one of those.
Oh God. Yeah. The amount of things that he would find in that carpet. I mean,
Can we stop? It was the 70s. Let's not talk about all the things that would be in that.
He comes to his, Columbo comes over and says, just like one final dig, you know, we're going to figure out where this was. And when we find this thing,
the lens, then we've got him. It's also for him to say, I'm not going to take your job.
Yes.
I'm not going to take your job because I really want to see this case through.
Yeah, basically. I really want to catch this guy.
Yeah.
It's like the most important thing to
do. Yeah, it's like two digs. I am turning down your incredibly, you know, generous offer/bribe.
Yeah.
And I'm turning it down because I'm going to catch you.
Yep.
And then he goes to his car in the shop and is
right. He breaks into the shop and digs around in his
trunk
and finds a contact lens.
Yeah.
And when, you know, confronted, he just bursts out and confesses the whole thing.
Yeah. Well, he tries to pass it off initially, and then Columbo, like, as he goes for, like, to light a thing, like, Columbo grabs his hand to yank it out and that whole kind of business. But there's also this moment afterwards when he's talking to the newspaper guy where he mentions the tailpipe potato and, you know, these old shenanigans, basically, that he used to get into, doesn't quite out and say, oh, I put that there. But he also says, oh, that, you know, no, she had both contact lenses.
Yes.
It wasn't hers. It was just some other one. So he doesn't admit it, but there's also a striking suspicion that he probably planted a contact lens.
I don't know that that's true. I think it's possible, certainly.
Well, I think that's part of what I enjoy is that. You could.
There's an ambiguity there.
Yeah, there's enough room for you to make that assumption, but it's not explicitly telling you that.
Yeah,
it's vague enough that you could kind of go either way. Is it like, is Columbo a little dirty, or is it?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that, like, one of the things about police procedure is that cops can lie to you all the time.
Yeah,
it's a thing you should just maybe be aware of in your life in general.
Yeah,
but cops can just lie to you.
Yeah.
And make up stuff. And Columbo is probably one of the best at this.
He's the best.
This is his thing. Is to just say, like, oh, here's the thing. here's the thing that I found, and then somebody's later and he's like, yeah, no, I just I just made that up.
I made that up.
I was just fucking with you.
Yeah.
And I gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha, motherfucker.
If you're a cop, you have to tell me the truth.
That's not true.
That's not true at all.
Absolutely not true.
Nope.
All right. In fact, they are encouraged not to do so.
Well, of course.
Yeah, I think that's going to do it. This is an excellent episode. I'm excited.
I really loved this episode.
I'm re-energized. We're back in.
I can't wait
for the next
one.
We got two good ones in a row.
Oh, good.
Yep.
Yep. You heard him.
Yep.
You heard it here.
Two good ones in a row, and I think we're headed into maybe more good ones.
Well.
I don't even know what the next one is.
I don't know, but you know better than I do.
That's true. I've actually seen them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining us on the Cologne Boys. I'm Mac.
I'm Ben.
Oh, and one more thing, sir.
Oh, yeah?
I should have thought of a question here.
Yeah, I guess so.
Cologne Boys is hosted by Mac Johnson and Ben Swallow. You can follow them on Twitter at MacJ and at DandyGeek. The Cologne Boys theme is by Seth Boyer. For more information about this and other great Waffle Media projects, you can go to waffle.media. Thanks for listening.
I mean, when he does the, like, his whole body doing...
He's bad at drinking. I don't know how you can be bad at drinking, but I have a dog that's bad at drinking.
I mean, he's not great. In fairness, my cat's not great at it either. Like, she actually will take her paw and stick it in the water and then lick her paw.
My treat. That's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, she'll drink out of it by, like, pushing her face all the way up against the end of it and that kind of thing. But, like, but she will also just straight, like, get her paw
like a
wet.
Fun dip.
And then, yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, our animals are weird, my friend.